countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Caller Gas, celebrating 80 years, bringing energy to Ireland's homes and businesses.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're welcome to Countrywide here at the National Ploughing Championships. It is Wednesday, it's not Saturday, but we're going to do a Countrywide roadshow here on the RTE stage in the RTE tent. It has been a difficult few weeks for beef producers right across the country, as we know, who've taken to the factory gates to highlight the low prices that they've been getting. And it's been making the news headlines all over the country during that time. And I'd like to welcome to the stage now, just to talk, I suppose, about that and other issues, challenges and opportunities facing the Irish agri-food sector. We have with us the president of the IFA, Joe Healy, and the editor of the Irish Farmers Journal, Justin McCarthy. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Joe, it's your last ploughing as president. Can you believe that? Been a busy and quick few years for you.
It's been busy, but it's been good and very challenging, and probably never more challenges there than there are now. You know, whether you look, no matter what's going on at the moment, it's all been discussed in the shadow of a Brexit, and a Brexit that we need to get a deal. The UK market is so important for Irish agri-food products. 37% of our total exports of agri-food products went to the UK last year. So, and I think it's one thing that that deal has to ensure, that the value of the UK market is also maintained. But as well as the Brexit, you have CAP reform, you have climate change, you have international trade deals, and you also have the farm income prices, and beef is the key one amongst that at the moment.
Okay, well, let's talk about the beef situation. What is your current read on it, Joe? There are still factories being blockaded. How serious is it now for the supply of beef to us consumers around here, and for farmers that have cattle ready for the factory?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that it's serious right back and starting from the farmer that has cattle ready, but also down the chain further, where you have the store man and the weanland man. They need the beef man to be in a situation to be able to buy those stores. They won't buy them if they haven't their beef killed. Everyone is aware, or most people are aware, that last Saturday and Sunday negotiations went on right through the day, through the night, and on into to Sunday as well. And the farm groups around the table, what was put on the table Sunday evening, it was evident that that was the best possible deal that was to be got. And the farm groups have gone out and gone through it with members in the hope that that people and protesters would take the immediate benefits. For instance, the InSpec bonus increases by 8% from 12 to 20, and a few other bonuses as well. And then hope that a few of the reviews that has to be done would bring greater transparency around the whole chain between the processor and the retailer, and also in relation to how much of those specs are actually required as well. And if they're not required, get rid of them.
Okay, Justin McCarthy, there are still farmers at the gates, although talks took place. Have the farm organisations, have they lost control of some of their members?
I think, Damien, there's a real deep frustration out there among farmers. When you're selling a product at about €200 below the cost of what it's costing you to produce, there, you can only imagine the sense of anger that builds up and the sense of frustration. And that spilled onto the factory gates about 8 weeks ago. And I suppose the key thing there is those farmers highlighted a real issue, and they've elevated this up to the highest level in government in terms of the income challenges facing farmers. I think there is a cohort of farmers out there that deeply, deeply, and for good reason in a lot of cases, deeply distrust the whole supply chain, the processor, the retailer relationship. And I think they do have a fear and are going to need a lot of convincing that this I suppose, deal that Joe talked about. And I think we need to be very clear, and I'm sure Joe would agree, this is not a deal that will solve the income crisis on farming at the minute. This is a deal that will bring transparency to the market, that will allow farmers at least some reassurance that the price they're getting for their animals is reflective of the market value. But unfortunately, it's not going to move the dial in terms of that profitability equation. And that's why farmers are, obviously, there's a small cohort of farmers still very sceptical and worried what happens if they come off.
Do you see this coming to an end shortly?
I think it has to come to an end, Damien. And I suppose I think what we have to do is convince those farmers that there is a deal there, and that, I suppose, put the minister and indeed the farm organisations that were around that table to the test, to show them that this deal can deliver. But it's not going to deliver anything while we stand. What it is going to deliver is going to deliver a lot of destruction to our markets, because we shouldn't be naive on this. And let's be straight up about it. Our premium retail customers are not going to sit in their hands and hope that Ireland starts killing cattle. They are actively looking at other markets. And my concern would be that even when we do start killing cattle, they're not going to ditch those other markets. We might get 80% of the tenders that we got before. And my concern is, who ends up carrying the cost? The farmer, because we know the margins are all just pushed back. And as Joe quite rightly said, this is an issue for beef farmers today, but it'll very quickly become an issue for weanland farmers and store farmers, because there's about 40 million less euros coming into the beef system every week at the minute, and that's going to be a problem.
And there's a glut of cattle building up. You mentioned one other big issue, a challenge facing agriculture and farming in the medium term, in the short term, but in the medium term as well, and that's climate change. Are Irish farmers ready for that big challenge, Joe?
I suppose the facts speak for themselves, and Irish farmers have been doing quite a bit in the whole climate change debate. I think, and I always say to our farmers, we can embrace that climate change challenge that's there. We're regarded by the European Commission Joint Research Centre as the most carbon efficient producers of dairy product in Europe, and in the top five in beef production. We talk about a growing world population that will be up to 10 billion in a couple of decades. Those will have to be fed. Climate change is a global issue. It's not just an Irish issue. So we say, let's produce the food in the most carbon efficient countries. And we are that. We're one of the very few, if not the only sector, that has a 10-year roadmap in the form of the Chagas Climate Abatement Plan. What we need to ensure is that the supports and the structures are in place that allows the farmers to achieve the targets that are set out there. But I think what we don't want, and what kills the talk about climate change in the farmers' eyes, is when they see our European politicians that pontificate to us on climate change do a deal with countries, the likes of Brazil, for example, in the Mercosur trade deal, that's between 4 and 5 times less carbon efficient than we are in the production of beef.
Okay, Brexit, Joe, what's your feel? Will there be a crash out on the 31st of October? What are you hearing? Is there a lot of work going on behind the scenes to avoid that?
Well, of course, there's a huge amount of work done at every level. And yesterday and the day before, IFA had Minette Batters, who is my counterpart. She's president of the English Farmers Union. We visited a farm just on the border, and then we were here at the ploughing yesterday. And they're just as concerned as we are, because it's very clear that a Brexit outcome that's good for Irish farmers is also good for the English, Scottish, Northern Ireland farmers. But a Brexit outcome that's bad for any one of us is bad for all the rest of us as well, because the UK farmers don't want to be competing against cheaper foreign imports that are produced to a lower cost of production and a lower standard of production. And I think our priorities has remained consistent right through, that we want the closest possible trading relationship between the EU and the UK. We also want the value of the UK market to be maintained and not undermined by cheaper foreign imports.
Justin, what are you hearing? Do you think that there will be some sort of an All-Ireland or indeed a UK-EU agreement relating to food and agriculture, and that will be signed off, and then they will do deals on everything else as well? In other words, that even if there is a sort of a crash out, that they will look after the agri sector, because it is a little bit different, isn't it, in terms of the trade between the UK and the EU?
It is a little different, Damien, and while a lot of attention is quietly rightly focused on the border and the north-south issue, let's look at this through a trade prism. It's very much about east-west. A Northern Ireland only backstop does nothing for agriculture in terms of addressing the concerns. Last week, I think it was in the Farmers' Journal, we calculated a 1 billion euro hit on the beef industry and a 100 million euro hit on the dairy industry. Joe is quite right. Like, the consequences of this is Armageddon. I think, Damien, for anybody to sit up here and say they have any insight into where it's going, all of what you described are options and are realistic options. But unfortunately, common sense and realism in British politics has gone out the window over the last couple of weeks. Now, there are signs that it's coming back in, and there could be a pullback, and I think we have to live in hope. But I think from a government policy point of view, all eyes will be on this budget. Minister for Finance has come out and said that this is going to be a no-deal Brexit budget. So farmers will be watching this budget very closely to see what extent that the Irish government is going to move to protect Irish farm incomes in a no-deal Brexit.
Okay. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much. You're very, very busy, I know, here at your respective stands, meeting customers and readers, in your case, meeting members, in your case, Joe. So, ladies and gentlemen, Justin McCarthy, CEO and editor of the Farmers Journal, and Joe Healy, outgoing president of the IFA. Thank you both very much indeed for joining us. All right, time, ladies and gentlemen, for some music. And I'm joined here by PJ Murray. PJ, how are you?
Good, Damien.
How are they all in West Clare?
Oh, good, no, good, yeah. There's a lot of people from West Clare here now today and here for the week, you know, 3 days, yeah.
And you are, I suppose, a full-time singer and a part-time farmer, or is this an off-farm job, singing and playing music?
Would it be, you were right first, yeah. I do sing, I read my family more or less from singing, but I do a bit of farming as well, yes.
So you're very much at home here. And PJ, you're going to play an old tune for us. Who have you here with you?
I have Jerome Corkley from Macroom on the accordion.
So it's a real Cork Clare Munster duo. And ladies and gentlemen, Jerome and PJ.
Hi, Jerome Morris Minor in 1964. And I've danced in every ballroom from Salt Hill to Templemore. My hair aisle days have come and gone, but I have no regrets. Listen, Varna, here I come, there's life in the old dog yet. There's life in the old dog yet, me boy, there's life in the old dog yet. Listen, Varna, here I come, there's life in the old dog yet. I met Nurse Maloney one night in the Bonangui, and I asked her back to Spanish Point to view the scenery. So we hopped in to my four-wheel drive us up the road we sped. Then hurrah for killing a scully boys, there's life in the old dog yet. There's life in the old dog yet, me boys, there's life in the old dog yet. Hurrah for killing a scully boys, there's life in the old dog yet. It's not the hen that shouts the loudest, lays the largest egg. Now the mule that kicks the hardest, boys that wear the longest leg. So pack your sack and hit the track, and you'll find your star, I'll bet. And keep her going till the cows come home, cause there's life in the old dog yet. There's life in the old dog yet, me boy, there's life in the old dog yet. Keep her going till the cows come home, cause there's life in the old dog yet. There's life in the old dog yet, me boy, there's life in the old dog yet. Keep her going till the cows come home, but there's life in the old dog yet. Thank you.
Oh, don't worry. We paid him enough. So he's going to stay for one more, aren't you, PJ? Good man. Okay, take a wee rest there. I don't know who he was talking about. There's life in the old dog yet. Marty Morrissey springs to mind. But anyway, it certainly wasn't you, Brenda. Ladies and gentlemen, Brenda Donoghue.
Damien. Thank you. What are we all like here? I saw some very clever lady over there who had a fan with her. I thought, how clever is that? Are we all sweating? Yeah. Not great for your complexion, Damien.
That's a tan.
The tan. Lots of farmers' tans are displayed. It is Costa del Carlo. And I want to say hello to a couple of people here. And will you stand up for me here? Because I have Bernadette. Are you able to stand, Bernadette? Of course she is. What am I asking her? Now, you are Bernadette?
Curtis.
And where are you from, Bernadette?
Barrentown, County Wexford.
And you're here with?
I'm here with my daughter and her husband. He's gone off somewhere.
He's after dumping you, is he?
Oh, he is.
Or have you dumped him?
No, he's into the machinery and cattle.
And the cattle. So do you love coming to the ploughing?
I've been, yeah, this is my about six times now.
Yeah.
When it was in County Wexford, I was at it. It was the second time in County Wexford. Down in... Folk Mills.
Now, would anybody, and I don't mean to be rude, do you mind this? Would anybody guess what age Bernadette is? 100? Bernadette, the cheeky little yoke, what age are you? Don't mind him.
Oh, I'm not going to say.
What, will I say it?
Yeah, all right, Brenda.
No, you say it.
93.
93.
The 1st of January, Brenda. Yes. The 1st of January.
A new year baby.
A new year baby, yes.
All right. Well, you will...
gift. There was 16 years between my brother and myself.
And you were the New Year's gift.
They forgot me.
They did. Yeah. Well, listen, we'll see you for the 100th birthday. Come back to us here on Countrywide. Bernadette Curtis, everybody. One of my favourite matches during the GAA season this year was the hurling match between Laois and Dublin. Did you enjoy that, sir?
No, I didn't. No. Laois.
Yes, of course.
Mohamed Pyle.
No, but you won that game. What's your name?
Jim McDonald's my name.
Okay, and who are you here with, Jim?
I'm with two neighbours here, Pat and Richie Bergen. They're two farmers. Okay, yeah.
And are you enjoying your day?
I really am. Yeah, great crack.
All right, well, look, have a listen to this, everybody. This is very interesting. We're talking about farm. Come out to me here, Aoife. Everybody, have a look.
Bring her up on the stage. Come on, up on the stage, Aoife.
Okay, this is Aoife.
You're welcome. Are you crying?
What?
Oh, no, it's blushing, sweat.
Yeah.
All right, you're
I think
blushing.
She's, yeah, we're all a little bit hot. Aoife Milka, as in the bar. And Aoife, tell us what kind of farming you do.
So we specialise in farming and distributing free-range Irish snails.
Wow. And where are you based and how many snails have you per acre?
We are based just 10 minutes down the road in a beautiful village of Garryhill. And you're talking about, what was your second question again?
How many snails have you got on the farm?
Oh, yeah, we introduced 660,000 baby snails this year.
Okay. Wow. I'd say the stock taking is great on that farm. So it's real slow farming, is it?
Well, if somebody asks how the business is going, we always say slow and steady, yes. Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from originally and how did you end up in Ireland?
So I'm pure Polish girl, 100%. There's no doubt about that. I came to Ireland over 13 years ago for work. I come from the big city in Poland, and I'm a culture now.
Yeah.
How cool is this?
With an accent to match as well. Yeah. It's kind of a Kildare accent you have there,
it is,
I think.
Yeah, I can actually train you for a Kildare accent. Why snails? What brought you to snails? Or what brought snails to you?
We loved snails and we couldn't get them in Ireland, so we used to rear them in these plastic containers in our one-bedroom apartment in Kilkenny back to 2012, purely as a hobby. We had no intentions whatsoever to start farming snails commercially, but we conducted some extensive market research and we discovered that there's a massive shortage of them, especially on the European market, and we said, why don't we try? So we did.
And the Irish climate is good for snails?
We have everything in Ireland to farm snails. We have ideal climate. Just look at your back garden, it's full of them. We also have an access to land. We have clean water. We have a good soil. And we are farming country with an excellent reputation for food. So if the rest of the world can do it, we can do it too. And we can do it better.
Okay, tell me and Damien one thing about snails we didn't know.
Snails, they have this very interesting sexual fetish.
Okay, we like
family family show.
So during the mating process, they stab each other to stimulate each other with the calcium arrow. So as I can imagine that you all know the story about this angel Cupid who shoots two people and they fall in love with each other. This story comes from snails making love.
Bit of bondage going on there.
Yeah, I think so. And tell me, is there money in snails?
Well,
I never thought I'd ask that question, but anyway.
You can't expect to generate more than 16,000 euro net profit per acre. And if you were selling your snails fresh into a wholesale market, if you're looking into developing different products for different markets, the margins are much higher.
Okay, so what is your favorite snail dish? Like, what would you give? We turned up at your house. What is our delicacy?
Tempura, like deep fried, like your fish and chips.
Yeah.
No, so lovely and crispy on the outside and lovely and meaty on the inside.
Well, Aoife Milka is on a mission to make us Irish people like snails, am I right?
It's all about breaking the psychological barrier we have in order to eat escargot, because they are very high in protein, very low in fat, and they contain nearly all these amino acids needed for the human body. So it is a healthy food. It is delicacy where we treat snail as a pest. in Ireland.
All right, and you're having a great time at the ploughing.
We have amazing time. It's mad, but it's a good madness, though.
Okay, everybody, let's hear it for Aoife Milke. Isn't she great, Damien?
Well done, Aoife. Congratulations, and yes. Great to have you on this special edition of Countrywide.
Great, thanks so much for having me.
You're great. Thanks very much. Thank you indeed, Aoife. Well, now we're going from small little animal to a very, very, very big, grand animal, because a number of years ago we received a letter on Countrywide from two young county Meath. Anyone from Meath here, by the way? Any Meath people? No farmers left in Meath. They're all dubs. All dubs living in Meath now. Anyway, there were two sisters from Meath, and they were heading off to the Young Scientists exhibition, and they had come up with a new product to help your horse eat up. If your horse wasn't feeling too well, or you know when a little baby is not eating, you have to do something to make the food taste nice so that they will take it. Well, they come up with this idea for horses that would not eat up, and anybody here that has a horse or has a pony knows what I'm talking about. But now they're employing people all over the world, and Kate Madden, you're very, very welcome. The name of the two girls were Kate and Annie Madden. Their company is Fenu Health, and I'm delighted to say that Kate is here with me. Kate, great to have you.
Congrats.
round of applause for you. Thank you, and you're welcome. So I made a really bad job there in explaining what
you're
fine. Actually
That's
do.
Great. Yeah.
So how is the business going now, Kate?
It's actually flying at the moment. So I'm only in second year in university in UCC. So Annie can't be here today because she's actually studying for the Leaving Cert. So we said she wasn't allowed to miss a day of school.
Of course.
But yeah, business is flying. So like you gave a pretty good introduction, to be fair. So about 4 years ago, we were on your show heading to the Young Scientist. I think I was like 15 at the time and Annie would have been 13. And now we started with like getting horses to eat, as you said, and now it's kind of snowballed into health products. So kind of like stomach problems, gut health, calming horses, all that.
So if I have a sick horse, you're producing the sort of medicine and supplements that help make the horse feel good again and eat up again.
Yeah, so 90% of racehorses have gastric ulcers or stomach problems. So what we came up with through the Young Scientist was 100% natural remedies to prevent and to cure it.
And if I was watching the big racing in Ascot or the Curragh or Leopardstown or Aintree, would I be looking at racehorses that are using your product?
Yeah, so like last year during Aintree and Leopardstown, over 50% of the horses that won were on our products. So like we export to 15 countries and we've 9 people working on our team, which is how we can manage to do school and the business at the same time because we've great people behind us.
That is absolutely fantastic. 19 years of age, studying away and employing, how many people?
9.
9 people outside of Ireland and in Ireland.
Yeah.
And having success with some of the best thoroughbreds in the world as well. It's really a tremendous success story. And for everybody that's young here and in school, at 13 and 15 years of age, right? 13 and 15, Kate and her sister came up with this idea and now look at them. So anything is possible. Isn't it, Kate, if you put your mind actually down to it. So you're around here for the few days, are you?
Yeah,
are you on
a
stand?
We don't have a stand, no, but we're just wandering around for the few days. Just myself, Annie's in school, as I said. So, yeah, if you have any questions, fenuhealth.com.
All right, fenuhealth.com. Great to see you. Keep in touch. Thank you very much. And
thanks,
the very best of luck with the rest of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Kate Madden. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, I'm delighted to welcome to the stage, just on perfect cue, ladies and gentlemen, the Minister for Justice from any Laois people here? Nobody from here. We've Laois, a few Laois people here. Oh, there's one down there. What's the weather like outside? We all know better. We'll be hearing more about it later. Evelyn Kisig is here. Minister Charlie Flanagan.
It's always shining in Laois.
It's always shining in Laois. You're very welcome, Minister Flanagan. And I know you're down here to launch something which is very, very important for a lot of people here living in rural Ireland. And that relates to, I suppose, rural crime, which is a big scourge. And maybe people here know of neighbours or maybe themselves that have been victims of crime, particularly people living in rural parts and people that are on farms. What have you been launching today?
Yeah, well, as Minister for Justice, I'm also speaking in my capacity as a rural TD, a rural minister. And I believe it's absolutely essential now as we move in towards the winter months, even though there's not much sign of it today, that we turn towards the protection of communities and the protection of people. And I was really pleased here to launch what is a new partnership, a new collaboration between An Garda Síochána and rural community groups. Everybody here knows the importance of community and the importance of volunteerism. It's one of our strengths here on the national stage and our international reputation. So we've brought together all the really significant rural groups, GAA, ICA, IFA, ICMSA, Muinstir na Tíre, all coming together with An Garda Síochána in a new forum, a forum to protect people, a forum to ensure that we can have an exchange of information, that we can see what we can do in terms of text messaging, obviously building on the Neighbourhood Watch and Community Alert, but in a formal structure. And I want to acknowledge and congratulate all the groups for coming in with the Garda Síochána on this really important initiative.
Minister, we had Joe Healy of the IFA here earlier and Justin McCarthy of the Farmers Journal, and they were talking about an issue. I know it's outside your department, but you are a rural TD, as you said, in a county where there are a lot of beef farmers. There's a beef factory as well. As a government minister and somebody that obviously knows the hardship that beef farmers and farmers in general go through, what do you have to say at this point in time, or do you have any comment to make about the current beef dispute that's going on?
Well, I want to say that the only means by which this can be resolved is going to be around the table by dialogue. There will be no resolution as long as the blockade continues. I'm really conscious of the sensitivities here. And of course, I acknowledge that this has been a very, very difficult time. In fact, the message here from the ploughing, and this is a real festive of Ireland, a festival here. But I want to acknowledge that there is something of a shadow over the proceedings here in terms of the two B's, and that's Brexit, on the one hand, because of the uncertainty, and secondly, beef, and because of the difficulties there. So I'm just really concerned now with Ireland's reputation as an agricultural exporting country, as a beef exporting country. I'm concerned that we don't do anything which will disrupt or interfere with the current market situation and our reputation. If that's damaged, it'll take a long, long time. And what I see at the factory gates is really unhelpful at the moment. And I'm appealing to people. I'm joining with the farm leaders. I met Joe Healy here. And I'm joining with farm leaders to bring people back from the brink here. And a return to talks. And let's see what we can do in order to address what is a really challenging and difficult situation. There's only so much a government can do. And the government cannot interfere and set a price. But what we can do is perhaps help and assist in the setting up of a forum, and maybe a little stronger than the beef forum that we have at the moment, a producers forum that will give the farmer far more bargaining clout and more influence when dealing with the factories.
Okay, all right. Well, we're going to leave it there. But thank you indeed very much for joining us here. I know you were on the News of One earlier, so you've been over and back here to the RT marquee a couple of times today. And I know you're going around the rest of the ploughing. You want to get the sunscreen on there now, Minister?
I need it. I didn't think I'd be putting on sunscreen on the
on the ploughing.
End of September or whatever. But anyway, it's good to be here. And can I say, as far as government is concerned, as Minister for Justice, I'm very keen to pursue all initiatives towards the protection of communities. All right. Speak to the Garda Commissioner on a regular basis. I want to acknowledge his leadership on the Garda team. My job as Minister for Justice, a greater level of investment, and to ensure that our criminal law is up to date.
Okay.
And I'll do that.
All right, so say all of us. Minister, thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much. Okay, Brenda, back over to you.
Thank you, Damien. Thank you, Minister. We're all surviving here. Are you enjoying the show so far? Yeah. Brilliant. Well, as we know, there are lots of interesting stands and stalls and entrepreneurs, and we've all been going around meeting some of them. And I'd like you to introduce you to a wonderful young lady, very entrepreneurial, very useful, and very innovative. Can you give it up for Anna Carmody, everybody? Anna, come over here to me. You are founder of Little Red Design Ado.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what it is and why you found it.
Okay, so Little Red Edu, it's a studio, a little studio with big ideas. So I founded Little Red and I had my granddad had an accident on a farm up in Mayo, and that's where my mother is from. And I was in the National College of Ireland Design studying product design. And for my final year project, I designed a children's book on farm safety. So I ended up creating a children's book and an app that comes to life through the book. The children's book comes to life through the phone app, So you just download the free app that comes with the book, and the characters pop up on the page through the, so it's like a magic book, the 21st century pop-up book is what I call it.
Well, obviously you have your own experience of farm accidents, and farm safety is such a huge issue. And I mean, you see children and adults walking around with their heads stuck in their phones, and they're not looking left and right. It's probably the same on farms. So how are you getting your message across?
So what I've done is taken all of the main hazards where most accidents on farms happen, especially with young children, and I've turned it into a story. So each scene of the story will have a different hazard, and that teaches the child farm safety. But also there's a self-narration feature in the book where the parents can record the story in their own voice. So the message comes across then in the parents' voice, and they might learn something too while they're reading it.
Every, isn't this amazing? Isn't she incredible? And Anna, where can we find you at the Plough?
So I'm in the Enterprise Arena just next door, and it's Little Red Edu, and I'm representing Dublin Local Enterprise Office today, Dublin City.
All right, Anna Carmody, isn't she amazing, everybody?
Absolutely
brilliant.
Wonderful
to hear and see. You wanted to play a request. Come over here. Who did you want to say hello?
I want to say hello to my grandson.
And what age is he?
He'll be four on Sunday.
And what's his name?
He's Shane O'Sullivan from Raygrove, Manan Bridge in County Cork.
Now, because I did that, I want you to stay around and do me a favour. Everybody, you know when you're out and somebody said, would you like to taste the wine, ma'am? You know that, isn't that nice? How about if somebody said, would you like to taste the milk, ma'am? Because with me, all the way from the Netherlands, I have Bas de Groot. Am I pronouncing that right?
Bas de Groot. But don't try it.
Okay, I won't try it. No. So you are a milk...
sommelier.
Sommelier.
Yeah.
What is that? And that's fascinating.
That's a good question because I don't know myself in a way.
Okay.
But it can be someone who just compare the drink, in this case is the milk, with food. That's what it originally does do in a restaurant. But I had a restaurant, but I didn't do anything with it, with the milk. And I have no restaurant anymore. But I use the flavor of milk to explain people, especially dairy farmers, that the milk is not white.
Okay. And are you the only one in the world?
Maybe I'm the first one. We're not sure, but I know for sure that we are with three of us.
Okay, amazing. And you've brought some milk for us too. Taste. I have some blind tasters here. Come up, girls, quickly. Yeah. What's your name?
Elizabeth.
And?
Karen.
And do you like milk?
Well, my husband's a dairy farmer, so I'd want to.
Okay, yes. You definitely would. But close your eyes, and what are we going to give her? Don't listen.
We give her two milks,
okay. And
they are different.
Okay, so give her the first one there. Okay, so he's now giving her a little container of milk. And what's your name again?
Karen.
Karen, and where's the dairy farm?
In County Leash, Rosenallis.
God almighty, Leash is everywhere. Right, knock back the milk there. Okay.
Brenda, you want to take...
What do you think of that? What flavours?
It tastes just like ordinary milk.
Okay, what she meant to taste?
This one is a bit sweeter. It's just a more regular milk that you find in the shop. But it's a full-fat milk. And this one I really like. It's a bit sweeter. I like it.
Yep. Have you one more milk to taste very quickly?
Yep.
Okay, girls, you enjoying tasting milk? All right, off you go. Knock it back. Knock back the milk. Pretend you're out. Everyone, now there she is. What did you notice the difference?
Yeah, it's a bit more bland than the other one, I'd say.
This one is a Jersey milk, so it's high in protein, high in fat. So there are two milks are really different to each other. But if we take the first one, it's from one herd. And we just take one cow out of it and another cow, it's different. And if you drink the milk in the morning from a cow, and in the evening it's different. So that's my fascination, that it's changing all the time.
Baz, you're over here, and what stand are you on?
I'm at the National Dairy Council. I did a milk tasting with John McKenna. It was nice, so yeah.
Everybody, it's not often you get to meet one of the three only wine sommeliers in the world. On Countrywide, milk. Sorry, wine. What's in my head?
It's on your head.
I think you all know.
In your head, man.
In the evening. The wine, yeah?
All right. Thank you very much, Baz.
Brilliant.
Davian.
Thanks a million. Thank you. And thank you to our blind tasters as well. Now, I'd say that every single person here today
at some stage since you got out of bed this morning, okay, let alone everybody at the ploughing, but everybody here today, at some stage has, in talking to somebody else, referred to the weather. Is there anybody here today who has not mentioned the weather when they're talking to somebody else or when they met somebody else outside? I doubt it, because we are in Ireland. This day last year, the ploughing was closed down because there was bins and marquees flying in the air, and now look at it. But one thing we must look out for while we enjoy the beautiful weather is, of course, our health and our skin. And I wonder, do we actually think about that when we're out enjoying the weather? Well, I'm delighted to say we are joined here by Barbara McGrogan from Healthy Ireland. Isn't that right, Barbara?
Yes, yeah.
And, of course, Evelyn Cusack, whom we all know, who is responsible, as we know, for the good weather. Because if Evelyn's in good humour, she'll give us good weather forecasts. And she's in bad humour, it's going to rain. Isn't that it, Evelyn? That's the way it works. It's the way it works. Anyway, Barbara, your message here to everybody.
Well, I just want to say, it's just been amazing being here. And the amount of people that have come up to our stand to talk about protecting their skin and skin cancer has been incredible. I just want to say that skin cancer is the most common cancer in Ireland amongst both men and women. And there's over 11,000 skin cancers diagnosed every year. That is one in every four cancers are skin cancer.
And is it because we're not putting on the sunblock? Is that the only reason why we get skin cancer? No.
There's different reasons why we're prone to skin cancer. The main reason is we are very fair-skinned. Look around today. People are sunburnt, fair-skinned. So that is one of the main causes of skin cancer for the Irish population.
I did put the sunscreen on now, in case you're looking at me.
No, I can see that.
I did put it on today. I always have to, even on Christmas. But Evelyn, why is the weather so good today and this time last year so bad? I mean, I know it's a silly question in one way, but then again, the seasons, they are changing, or are they?
Well, no,
it's very unpredictable, isn't it?
It's not a silly question, because there's huge natural variability at Ireland's latitudes. And what that means is, we're dominated by Atlantic westerlies, but at this time, the Azores High has actually come up. Now, it's called the Azores High because it's always down the Azores. So it's paid us a little visit. So the sky is clear and the sun is shining. It's still very hot at this time of year, the sun. And as Barbara said, it's still very dangerous. So it's been recommended that the time to cover up is between April and September inclusive. Between about 11 and 3 o'clock, you get the most damage done to your skin from the sun's rays. And I'm just looking at that man there. He is right with the hat. You
exactly.
See the wide brimmed hat there.
That's
yourself,
the hat.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Woo!
Come up here and show us your hat.
Show us your hat.
So you're using this man now as an example.
I'm
so
using
do a bit
this
of modeling
man as
here
an
now.
Example.
Yes.
Yeah. Good man. So yeah. I remember, like, my Uncle Luke, who's a farmer in Rackhugh, and my grandparents, they all used to wear hats and caps, all the farmers, and the big jacket up. And all that idea is gone. So the older people had the best. Not saying you now, the generation before you.
And the great thing about that hat is it's wide-brimmed.
Yeah.
And that is the most important factor, because it's covering up
your neck,
your head, your face. So that is so important.
Yeah, okay.
And other key messages really are put on the sunglasses, UV protection sunglasses, because you're more prone to cataracts and also cancer of the eye as you get older if you don't protect your eyes. And then cover up your skin as well. Long sleeved, if possible. And sunscreen, of course.
All right. And Evelyn, what's the weather going to be like for the rest of the week?
Well, it's going to be even hotter tomorrow,
oh.
I'm afraid. Yeah. 22 degrees Celsius.
Wow.
So enjoy it while you can, because it's not going to last.
How far on can you predict?
So the predictions are now, with our medium range modelling, it's about 10 days ahead. So if somebody tells you that the cat ran up the mountain and it means it's a sign of a bad winter, sorry, that's not true, okay? If there were predictions for the seasons ahead, Metairn would give them, because that's what your tax money pays for Metairn. So if there were forecasts ahead for the winter, we would give them to you. So, Don't fret if you hear of a forecast for a cold winter. It's rubbish.
Right, it's too far away.
Yeah, so about a week ahead we can tell at the moment.
All right, but it's going to be great tomorrow. So the message here, Barbara,
is skin cancer is the most preventable cancer of all the cancers. And UV rays from the sun is the main cause of skin cancer. So protect your skin, mainly between April and September. Between those times of 11 a.m. in the morning to 3 p.m. in the evening, when UV rays are at their strongest. So that is the key message.
Okay, well, listen, it's a very, very important message. We intend to, we enjoy the sunshine. It doesn't happen that too often, and we tend to forget then to look after ourselves.
Damien,
Evelyn and Barbara, yes?
Damien, quickly, be winter ready. I know this sounds weird, but everyone come to Met Aran Stand and learn all about our weather warnings for the winter. I'll hand them out, the brochures.
Okay, and there will be weather live here later on this evening. Evelyn and Barbara, thank you very much indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to the RT stage Marty Morrissey and Jack O'Connor. Gentlemen, Jack, of course, Leinster Championship medalist. Anyone from Wexford here? Leinster champions. And one of the great stars of the team is Jack O'Connor, who's here. And Jack, you're no stranger to the ploughing or to farming.
No, not. It's our first year here as a company. But
Work with MSD. Tell us what MSD do.
I do. So MSD, Animal Health, they're a vaccine company. And they provide vaccines for farmers and in particular our vets. So it would be interesting to see if the lady with the slug farm, with the 60,000 slugs, if she needs any vaccines. But we're a vaccine company providing solutions for farmers. So.
Okay. What a year it was for you, Jack.
Yeah.
So it was elation and disappointment to an extent, but I suppose the elation outdoes the disappointment of losing All-Ireland semi-final, particularly against Tipperary, who went on to win it. But just bring us back to beating Kilkenny of all teams in the Leinster final. What was the feeling like there, Jack?
How long do you have?
Yeah.
I suppose it was great. And when we lost the semi-final, it kind of blurs the success that we had winning the Leinster final. But as time passes now, you can reflect on the season and you can kind of put your hand up and say, yeah, we did it. And you look back on those good, fond memories. It's hard to describe the feeling.
Yeah.
I suppose in the next couple of months when we finish with the club hurling as well, that's when you look back on the success that we did have.
What's there, or is there a Davy factor? There has to be.
Oh,
I mean,
sure
the players, it's you lads on the pitch, but, when you look at his record with the different counties, there has to be a Davy factor.
I know. Davy's Davy. He gets the most out of himself, his backroom team, his players and the crowd. So, and I think that's the factor that he really brought to the whole Wexford setup for the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Speaking
of Davey, you have a clear man beside you, Marty Morrissey. You went missing, but you're back.
I didn't know I was missing. Hello, everybody.
Marty is on the NDC stand with Greg O'Shea from Love Island. The two of them, what a duo! I mean, what a great thing for the NDC to actually get a win-win situation where they get. This beautiful, tanned, number one TV star of the Irish summer. Greg O'Shea as well on the same stand. How are you getting on over there, Marty?
I'm very well. Well, I was there yesterday. I'm not there today. I'm here now to be a guest on your programme.
Yes.
Which I occasionally fill in as presenter to raise the audience levels. To make more people listen to Countrywide.
Yeah.
I do it for the love of the people of Ireland, and then of course for you, Damien.
Yeah, and then I rise it even more when I come back then,
By the way, Damien, it's not often that on the radio I have my next door neighbour sitting beside me.
PJ Murray, there
PJ
you go.
Murray.
That's Ireland for you, Marty, isn't it?
I played football with PJ. Now, I was only 13, 14, of course, when I played football with PJ, but...
you were Marty's inter-county career was kind of short-lived. After 10 minutes, the manager of the Clare Minor team said, "Warm up, Marty, you're coming off." But, Marty, what an All-Ireland final last Saturday. You've done a lot of them.
Yeah.
You've been to a lot of them. Where does it rank?
I think the first half of Dublin Kerry was up there at number one, to be honest with you, in terms of football. I think sometimes when we get games like that, we kind of forget about some of the stuff we'd seen earlier, and a lot of it was poor. Some of it was good, but I thought the two All-Ireland finals were exceptional. But then they are the two best teams in Ireland. Yeah. And I think Kerry will be the team that will win in All-Ireland in the next year or two.
Okay.
I have no doubt.
And what
I
about
knew there was a couple of people from Kerry here.
what about the any dubs here, by the way? Hey, what about six in a row, Marty? Is it possible?
I think it depends on who stays.
Yeah.
I don't know if Jim... I get the feeling Jim Gavin is going to stay.
Right, is that what you're hearing?
I thought during the week he wouldn't, but now I'm beginning to think differently. I think even Stephen Cuxton might stay.
Okay.
But there will be others. Like, I'm sure Bernard Brogan, Paddy Andrews I know is retiring. I don't know about Michael Dara. Philly McMahon is getting married and he may retire. Like, there's a lot of
them. Are you kind of saying they get married, that retires them, is it, Marty?
Well, he might be a bit tired. Like, right. You know what I mean?
What about this man beside you and his Wexford teammates this
Jack,
year?
Damien, I don't recognise him without his helmet on. Yeah. Well, and that's so unusual. But Wexford had a great year. And I think Davy Fitzgerald is an amazing individual. I know I'm biased because he's from Clare and he's a good friend of mine. But since he went into management, he has won between junior hurling with Aina Kilimona back at home in Clare. He's won 28 trophies, which is remarkable when you think about it, including All-Irelands with Clare. I think Wexford were unlucky not to make the All-Ireland final at least. And I think they look back already and with hindsight with a certain amount of disappointment.
Well, Marty, if you're talking to Davey, would you mind asking him to let the players know if he's going to come back to us or not?
He's keeping it under his hat.
He might be able to get it up to 29 on his record. Jack,
I have to tell you, he may want to come home to Clare.
Oh. Well, we'd see. Anyway, Jack, you're looking forward to another year then with Wexford, hopefully with Davey at the helm. But even without him, is it a team that can go one step further, win an All-Ireland maybe?
I suppose all teams, Damien, set out at the start of the year to go win an All-Ireland. And we've got a taste for it this year, what's required to compete at the top level. And not doing it for 60 minutes, doing it for the full 70.
Yeah.
So with that, the panel of players we have and what we've developed over the last few years, I do believe that we can kick on again next year. But there is teams, every team, there's about 8 or 9 teams now in the hurling that are thereabouts on any given day. So,
all right.
Exciting season ahead.
All right. Well, listen, it was one of the great stories of 2019, the Wexford hurlers. And indeed, I don't think there was a person left in Wexford for that Leinster final. So it's great when you see the satisfaction you give all of them. Marty, thank you very much indeed for joining us. And I'm sure you're going to be knocking around as well over the next few hours. Ladies and gentlemen.
Could I interrupt
yes,
you?
Yes.
Because when you're finished... now at 3:30,
yes.
I'm coming in here
yes,
with the Sunday game team.
Yeah,
and we've Michael Dignan, we've Desi Dolan, and we also have Ursula Jacob. All
right.
In.
Okay, so will the people please stay for them? Because I know there's a big crowd here. You might be all heading off, but please stay for Marty, will you? The place could empty out now very quickly, but do.
Okay, that's one all now. That's
stay.
One all.
Yeah, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Jack O'Connor and Marty Morrissey. Thank you all very much. Thanks to Brenda and all our guests. Thanks to the Sound Lads. Thanks to Brian Lally. PJ Murray is going to play us out. Bye-bye. And don't forget, tune in Saturday morning, with or without Marty, Countrywide at 8:10 on Radio 1. Bye-bye.
Okay, I'll finish with a song that I wrote recently. I was asked to sing a funny song. I hope this is a funny one. It's called Soldier On, a song about a pig and all that. Lived a widow in our town. Her name was Mary Ellen Brown. Every year that the good Lord sent, she'd wear a pig to pay the rent. She had one son, her only hope. He wouldn't kick snow off her rope. He'd rarely rise before 10:30. Talk of the town of Elphin. The army then she made him join, and they sent him to a foreign clime. And as the bombs fell all around, like a duck in thunder he'd be found. No one cared or gave a damn for the broken-hearted Irish man. So he wrote a letter home one day to his mother, he did say, "Sell the pig and bail me out, I miss the bingo and the south." She wrote back and said, "Dear John, the pig is dead, now soldier on." Well, Mrs. Brown, just plain to tell, would not give in that pig to sell. Saved his bacon many a time, saying, "I won't bail out that son of mine. Let every hen scratch for itself," was her reply to his request. "Mother, never changed her song. The pig is dead, now soldier on. Sell the pig and bail me out. I miss the bingo and the stout. She wrote back and said, dear John, the pig is dead, now soldier on. The pig is dead, now soldier on. Thank you.